tonight's verse, which could either be 75 or 74, I realize I don't like either one of these verses. I have absolutely nothing worthwhile to say about either of these verses. In fact, they both, I realize, totally annoy me. There were a few things I thought maybe I would be able to say about them, but as I was driving over here tonight, I realized, no. If I was going to talk about anything, I was going to talk about how I don't resonate with these verses and I don't want to say a word about them. Which brings me to the topic of Saraswati or Saraswati. People say the name differently. And the notion that we've been talking about of being in reality as opposed to in what we think reality is. Being in reality as opposed to whatever agenda or belief system or idea we might have about what we're supposed to be doing. And so I realized for me to talk about these verses tonight would be breaking that dharma that I was talking about last week and that I've really been talking about forever, which is the dharma of speech, which is to speak only that which is true, necessary. Oh my God, I forgot the first one.
Kind.
Thank you. True, necessary, and at the appropriate time. And since nothing I could possibly say about these verses would fit into any of those very important dharma categories, we're going to Swaha, the Tao Te Ching for this week, and we'll pick up again with 73, I believe it is, which is once more back in the groove of what we're about here. What I didn't like about these verses, and I leave it to you to sit with them, is they make a lot of assumptions, and I don't think assumptions fit into the paradigm of what we're about here. They really come from a very relative state of mind, as opposed to a much more integrative and, I don't know what the opposite of relative would be, but whatever that is. There's a level of truth, and then there's truthiness, and I think these are more in the category of truthiness than truth. So we will let them float. I did bring some Mary Oliver, and it was really interesting, because as I was sitting with these verses tonight, realizing I'm not inspired, there's nothing about them I want to say, except how annoyed I am by them both. And then I started pulling down all these books of poetry and I said, well, what else can I bring? And nothing spoke to me. And I had the idea, I'm not going to bring in Mary Oliver tonight because I always bring Mary Oliver tonight. But I finally surrendered. I just have one shelf that's all the poetry books. And of course, this one, I was so drawn to it. And I was resisting it because, again, I had the idea I want to do something different for a change. But I went with what was calling me. So I will read you three Mary Oliver poems. And I did want to say, I went for a walk today and I listened to last week's Dharma talk, which I believe is November 6th, and then the one before, which is October 30th, which I got up onto the blog today. Hopefully I'll get November 6th up in a couple of days. Also, those two Dharma talks were really in my mind. It's so, I don't even have words. I can't speak for any of you, but I can certainly speak for myself when I say, when I go against the Dharma of my own truth, when I go against that Saraswatian inner voice / knowing that I've come to know or trust, when I go against that out of some idea of the mind, I always regret it in the next moment, if not the next day. And it just, again, I can't say to myself and to all of us enough times, that voice that comes from the depths of our being, it's so important to listen to it and try to honor what it is suggesting. And sometimes it doesn't speak in words. Often it doesn't speak in words. It's those, just those very gentle sensations or little teeny tiny quivers. They can be so subtle and so easy to miss. And we get so caught in the track of what our mind slash ego's agenda is for what we should be doing in any given moment of our life. And that track, while it may be productive, exhilarating, empowering, helpful, it sometimes is also pulling us out of the experience of that deep inner pulsation of what we might call pure being. That's a kind of a big empty metaphor. I'm not sure it really says anything. But if we understand this deity field that's been personified as the goddess Saraswati, if we understand that as, again, this luminous river of insight, intelligence that moves through us, this very liquidy insight intelligence that's always there underneath everything, underneath the stories, underneath the narratives, underneath the psycho-emotional wounding, underneath the ideas of what we should be doing, underneath our belief systems, underneath all of that is this luminous river of insight intelligence. And it's insight intelligence. It's not intellectual intelligence. It's insight intelligence. And that's the deep, deep, deep knowing that, in my understanding, is what gives the real meaning to everything that we speak. And speaking or thinking is often the first step in creating, doing, making. It's how we process daily life. So the more we reach into that insight, intelligence, luminous river that's just through everything, that's what takes us to the core of meaning. That's what gives meaning. You know, people are always searching for meaning. That's what makes the meaning. And I like to put the Saraswati Bija mantra together with Om Namah Shivaya the way we're chanting it tonight, because for me, Om Namah Shivaya, it's like, it's the pure stillness. And in the same way that we've said for so many years, and Kali is the power of truth that rises out of that stillness, that fierce, articulating, clarifying truth. Well, Saraswati also rises up out of that stillness, but it rises up as that river of insight intelligence. And that other mantra that we also sang tonight, Devi Saraswati, Jai Saraswati, I was mixing it all up. Tava Sharanam, I take refuge in. Tava Sharanam, I take refuge in that river of insight intelligence. And the more we take refuge in that, the easier it becomes to announce that I don't like these two verses and we're not going to do them tonight. So, let me read Mary Oliver. This first one is called Such Silence. Such silence. As deep as I ever went into the forest, I came upon an old stone bench, very, very old. You know, the wonderful thing about this poem and about any great piece of literature, we can read it on its literal level, which is fine, but you can also take it down several notches and imagine going deep into the forest of your own being and coming upon that old stone bench, very, very old, kind of the bench of the heart, and sitting there. So again, hear this poem in its literal imagery, which is beautiful and wonderful, and hear it also as a metaphor for the inner world and the inner journey. As deep as I ever went into the forest, I came upon an old stone bench, very, very old, and around it, a clearing, And beyond that, trees taller and older than I had ever seen. Such silence. It really wasn't so far from a town, but it seemed all the clocks in the world had stopped counting. So it was hard to suppose the usual rules applied. Such silence. It really wasn't so far from a town, but it seemed all the clocks in the world had stopped counting. So it was hard to suppose the usual rules applied. Sometimes there's only a hint, a possibility. What's magical sometimes has deeper roots than reason. I hope everyone knows that. I sat on the bench waiting for something. An angel, perhaps, or dancers with the legs of goats. No, I didn't see either. But only, I think, because I didn't stay long enough. And this one, watering the stones. Every summer, I gather a few stones from the beach and keep them in a glass bowl. Now and again, I cover them with water and they drink. There's no question about this. I put tin foil over the bowl tightly, yet the water disappears. This doesn't mean we ever have a conversation, or that they have the kind of feelings we do, yet it might mean something. Whatever the stones are, they don't lie in the water and do nothing. Some of my friends refuse to believe it happens, even though they've seen it. But a few others, I've seen them walking down the beach holding a few stones, and they look at them rather more closely now. Once in a while, I swear, I've even heard one or two of them saying, "Hello," which, I think, does no harm to anyone or anything, does it? She so lives in the space between. And this last one, this is the one that the title poem, it's the poem is called Franz Marc's Blue Horses. Can you see it? Mm-hmm. Sorry?
I said no, but I know the painting.
It's such a beautiful painting. So she writes, "I step into the painting of the four blue horses. I'm not even surprised that I can do this. One of the horses walks towards me. His blue nose noses me lightly. I put my arm over his blue mane, not holding on, just commingling. He allows me my pleasure. Franz Marc died a young man, shrapnel in his brain. I would rather die than try to explain to the blue horses what war is. They would either faint in horror or simply find it impossible to believe. I do not know how to thank you, Franz Marc. Maybe our world will grow kinder eventually. Maybe the desire to make something beautiful is the peace of God that is inside each of us. Now, all four horses have come closer, are bending their faces toward me as if they have secrets to tell. I don't expect them to speak, and they don't. If being so beautiful isn't enough, what could they possibly say? Maybe the desire to make something beautiful is the peace of God that is inside each of us. If being so beautiful isn't enough, what could they possibly say?" So let those percolate around in your own beautiful inner being. In one of the talks that I listened to today, I'm talking about Dumavati as the space between. I was really, how can I say, I was just pleased that I'd said that because I think it's about the best explanation of what Dumavati is. And I think the more we can really feel Dumavati as the space between and Lakshmi as everything else, we're good to go. And we really want a full integration of these two aspects of everything within us, right? What is manifest and what is not manifest, all of it. But all of it conscious. I mean, that's the thing. Dhammavati is the unmanifest, but it's the conscious unmanifest. And that's a tough concept to wrap one's mind around. Our notion of the unmanifest is that it's unconscious. But in this paradigm, in this so-called divine paradigm, both are fully alive, both are fully awake. And in a way, we experience that in that river of insight intelligence personified as this data field called Saraswati or Saraswati, depending on where you are and how you speak it. And we're really playing with those three as one over these weeks, because it really is all one big one. Lakshmiye namaha Parama lakshma vashtitayai Harim nasrim narim swaha Dum 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 avati swaha. So we'll sit for a bit. And as we always say, no effort. Let yourself rest in your own presence. Let yourself rest in the fruit of your chanting this evening. Let yourself rest in yourself. That's all we need to do.